subito dare la possibilità a chi vuole di porre domande.
My God, I try to speak in English because there are non-Italian speakers. I have two questions, one for you and one for Caroline. The question for Monella is, in 19th century, Europe discovered historical grammar and discovered a model of presentation of useful for the history of any language. Graphic facts, sounds, forms, and in the sounds in German they say we have vocalismus and then consonantismus. Of course, I am absolutely confident that we have, even if I'm not very competent, that we have a poor history of the late Greek and a poor history of Greek Latin. But I wonder, the disorder of is a casualty of an richest apparatus that takes a lot of time, is very time consuming, is worthwhile. It wouldn't be better that the editor of a critical edition, digital or whatever, also paper one, that is a fine connoisseur of that text, write a description according to the model of historical grammar. It isn't more efficient, productive, easy to consult than to put all these fruit salad in the apparatus in which I find a graphic fact, a morphological fact, etc., etc., and enormously time-consuming. Because if I make, come si dice spoglio in inglese?
Survey.
If I make a thank you, then if I make a survey of graphic forms, of course I concentrate only on specific facts or specific features. So I don't have the time-consuming task of transcribing all the manuscript and 2, 3, 4, 5 copies, and in the same time, I offer a treatise on graphic facts and morphological facts, etc. So this is a question for you. To Caroline, well, I appreciated, even before of hearing her, I appreciated the beautiful title. And what can I say? I say, sister, we believe in the same gods. We speak the same language, etc., etc. Only out of curiosity. You said that your maybe P manuscript is a fossil. Is it not possible that P is a direct epigraph of the archetype, and that is a so-called collateral is a very conservative one in another branch? Of course, you have a survey of significant error, so you can say that no is very strongly linked to P and not to the other branch. But I was just wondering if it is just a case that he preserved only that variant reading, that good variant reading.
No, he also has mistakes.
Of course, it make a lot of mistakes, but on the fact of preserving good readings. there is only that case, or he has...
No, there are many other cases.
Many other cases of good readings. Mm-hmm. So, well, probably you already thought about the possibility that is collateral, is A, or no, what? A? Is, so it is possible that A is a very early exponent of their family. Mm-hmm. Not at all. So...
Thank you.
Anything else to say? So you answer, so it's my turn. Okay, so I think the question you're asking, to answer that, I should distinguish between classical philology and medieval philology, for example. My general answer is this. This approach is as valuable as much you value the individual manuscript as an object of study, as a cultural object. So if our goal is only to make a repertoire, a list of errors of particular paleographic forms for a specific study, yes, you can recur to more traditional methods to study only one aspect. And it is immensely time-consuming, for sure. But that time, do you want to spend that time? You are more eager to spend that time and those resources if you're interested in the manuscript per se, if you're interested in the language of that manuscript per se, in the orthography, the spelling of that language per se. So, for example, there are corpora of early Italian medieval poetry. There are corpora of early Sicilian poetry in which the text of that manuscript and the specific spelling of that word at that point is so important per se and not for the constitutional texts that we do want to encode the specific manuscript. And this is a project that do exist. This is the real reason why I turned to medieval philology. I didn't want to, but that's when they're interested in the specific manuscript. So I almost completely gave up on classical philology. Because I do realize that the only way you can do this kind of addition for a classical text, is when you want to assert a point, to make a point, that each individual manuscript is a cultural object. It's almost a matter of principle. For medieval texts, you can be more interested because you consider the specific linguistic form and the specific manuscript culturally significant per se. That's my general answer to this. I don't know if I did answer at all.
Yeah, well, I had anyway many questions to you. So it's an argument I've heard many times that classical philologists and Lacanian philologists do not pay attention to every manuscript per se. But I've been working on the homilies of Gregory of Nazianzus, which are preserved in hundreds of manuscripts. And I can tell you that I've met many manuscripts which were absolutely not interesting at all. And I'm a humanist, so I like human beings, but I'm not interested in all of them. And there are many of them I would not like to meet ever. So to me, those are two different goals. So if people are interested in one manuscript, very well, they can do whatever they do with it. It's very fine. It's something completely different than making a critical edition of a text written in a very far away past for which we do not have any direct witnesses, which is not remote from less than a few centuries. I mean, the goals are different. And I think it's a myth to believe that digital edition will meet all the needs we have and all the goals we have in one click. Because now I will start a project in Lausanne, and it's exactly a project I'm not the project leader, I will be working there. It's exactly the kind of project you were talking about. We will make a full transcription of every manuscript. Fortunately, there are only 12.
Only 12?
How many?
12. Because I think that Francesco Bologna would have never completed its edition of the Physiologus Acidi in 1936 if he would have done it digitally. That's also another question. So we will make full transcription of every manuscript and then print it critical edition, but we will make all the transcription available on the internet. I'm extremely skeptical about this project because I think we will never finish it. And also, I'm wondering about the use of it. Because you said that people are very interested in the language and the writing and so on. I'm not so sure they are.
I think that a matter that's clear here is that this approach or the other, which approach you choose, depends on a matter of principle to a very large extent. As I said before, if the goal is the constitutio text, is the constitutio textus, then the traditional edition is okay. That's one of the points I always do in this respect. If we don't broaden up our research agenda, I absolutely agree there's no need to transcribe every individual manuscript. For the goal of the constitutio textus, that filtering, the filter of the variable, of the variance is necessary. Okay, I take your point of we don't know whether people really are interested in manuscripts, in spellings, in orthography, and paleography per se. I actually am not sure whether this will be an audience. I'm just saying that the kind of digital edition that we can realize is a different object of study, not only serving the purpose of constitutive thesis. If, and that's what I said from the beginning, if you consider it in that way, I do honestly, not for the sake of, you know, of argument, I do value the traditional print edition. The matter of time is a great problem in my own life because I did not finish the transcription of Ursus von Benevento, so this is another issue. It depends on how much we're interested in these other research goals, which are beyond constitutional texts.
Okay, yes.
Another question here, maybe the acoustics is a little difficult here. But talking about uninteresting people, yes, there are some people about that.
We hear better if you use the
German.
Come here, Caroline.
Sorry, this is. Does it work? Okay. I think that it's a huge difference, possibly, between people working in classical philology who are drowned in manuscripts, and people like me who is working in vernacular philology. We haven't that many manuscripts, and each single manuscript is important as a linguistic source. So I recently written a story about old Norwegian language, and for that kind of writing, I really need to look into every single manuscript, and believe me, they are interesting. But we have so small amount of manuscript, and I think that maybe that is the huge difference between classic theology, biblical theology, and vernacular theology. I will return to this point tomorrow. I'm giving a talk in the evening, if there will be time for it. But I have one question for Paolo Monella. And I really enjoyed it because the way you have been working is roughly the same as we do. We use the choice element in Tay-based XML in order to record variant readings in variant orthographies. But there was one element I was missing, the W element for the word, because if you are working with a text and slips your continua, you really need the word element in order to make divisions between words. We don't have it in Latin manuscripts in Old Norse, but in runic inscriptions. They are in scriptio continua partly until about 1400, so we really need to have the W element. And the other thing is that there will be a mismatch, like 5%, between graphical words and what you might call lexical words. It's very common in Latin, as well as in Old Norse, to have the preposition and the noun in a single graphical word. And you would like to represent that in your edition, and at the same time to treat them as a different word in case you would do something which I would recommend, which is to annotate a text linguistically. Sorry.
Thank you for this question. I said I wouldn't dwell into the technical aspects, which to me are not technical at all, but they're methodological as well. So I did not talk about my own edition, Ursus from Benevento. Well, partial edition, because it takes a whole lot of time. And I was working at school, and I was the only investigator in the project. Anyway, yes, in that edition of Ursus from Benevento, I do use W, and it's incredibly valuable, because, for example, unus quisque, each one. Unus space, V squared. In that addition, I have a marker for graphical space. And the graphical space is marked with PC, and I have W to separate, to mark the linguistic words. By the way, I do lemmatization of those words, which is another valuable tool. So going so deep, if you're interested in manuscripts per se, if you go into that kind of detail in coding, you can do a very accurate representation of the text, but you can also take out statistics on how a word is divided from the other, how it's represented in the manuscript, etc. So to answer your question directly, I do use W, I do use markers for graphical space, because this is an interesting concept. The linguistic word and graphical word are two different concepts. And this is also interesting if we're interested in language per se and how language is represented in a specific historical time, etc. Thank you.
I'll follow the example of Paolo Trovato and ask a question from both the speakers. From Paolo Monella, you argue for documenting every manuscript on the grounds of what it brings for an understanding of the history of the language and the history of writing. I also think that knowing better every manuscript can improve our knowledge of the constitutive textus. When I see a critical edition, one of my questions is, are any significant variants or corrupt passages underreported? Is how complete is the critical apparatus? Most critical apparatuses omit all sorts of readings. Are these omissions in any way significant? And it's useful to be able to see whether the manuscripts say something interesting that the editor doesn't think is interesting. The other question is whether this is feasible, and I've just done a little calculation, and the Catullus's surviving manuscripts run to about 350,000 lines of poetry. So if you start collating that, you might have a nice task until retirement. So perhaps you could just add the image of the manuscripts, which is not the same thing as collating, and in some cases it might actually bring less information, but it's an alternative. As for Caroline Massé, I was fascinated by your study of this extremely rich and complex transmission. I was wondering about the stemma, though. So you give it three or four branches, depending on what we do with the Syriac translation, but it seems a little bit unlikely that a mechanically transmitted stemma would split into four branches at one point, especially if it's a very rich transmission. So I was wondering, could this be families of contaminated families or types of texts? Or could we even be dealing with a bipartite stemma on the basis of the beautiful elephant deer mistake that you brought up?
Yeah, it's a very difficult question. I must say that I'm working chapter by chapter, so I've not yet collected all the chapters. So I'm making one stemma per chapter, and then I will compare all the stemmata and try to come to a conclusion about the general history of the text. Giovanni Orlandi claimed that the tradition was very contaminated already at the very top level. It's only a question that one can answer when one has made a full list of all the secondary readings, which nobody made so far, because the example of the elephant and the stag would push me to make only two branches, at least for that chapter. But I still have to understand how it could have happened in the tradition. I mean, how materially that kind of mistake of shifting a small paragraph from one chapter to the other could have happened. And I think one can only answer this question when we think about the order of the chapters. Maybe in the original orders, the two chapters were much closer than they are now in the medieval manuscript. And Just one remark. I mean, it's not because we are looking for secondary readings that we don't look at manuscripts. The good introduction to classical critical editions are full with good information about manuscript and about the language. In the series of editions I was responsible for when I was working in London, so the Corpus Christianum Sanctae Graecae, every introduction was made, and also as a part of the introduction, a small treatise on the language of each manuscript. It's a problem of time, it's also a problem of choice. I think that when you have only three manuscripts, you can be very accurate for each of the three. When you have 100, it becomes already more difficult, I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'd start from this. It's definitely a matter of choice. And the whole point of the first part of my talk was this: what are we interested in and to which extent? I think we all agree that we can, with the digital code, encode linguistic, paleographic data, information, to a level that's unparalleled by any of the best introductions. That's, I mean, not arguable. The point is that to which extent are we interested, how much information we want to encode, and why? I think that in order to reply your question, you replied your question yourself, because you asked, do you want to encode every manuscript? And it was like, this is not feasible. And then you said, you answered yourself, it's not feasible. And then 300,000 lines, yeah, impressive, right? So the point of the first part of my talk, however, was not a glorious one. It was a little bit sad, because I was trying to argue that if we're not interested into this, there is no point in doing digital editions as opposed to print edition. And as I am a digital philologist, this is said for myself, right? But I truly believe it. It's not a defeat for anyone. I mean, for the sake of constitutional texts, for establishing a stem, etc., well, the experimentations have been carried on since the 70s. Creating databases of meaningful variants, etc. This is a great approach. But as opposed for creating the stemma, this is useful, this makes sense. But if you only want to visualize an apparatus criticus and you only want to make the constitutional textus and substantial variants, then don't do the digital. That's my approach. And then we go back to that point. What are you interested in? And this is the reason why there are so many digital projects in medieval philology and so forth, in the classical texts. But then again, my point is that if the digital scholarly edition should be a scholarly tool that has an added value to the print edition, to me. Otherwise, there's no point in spending so much more time. Even recording substantial readings with a computer takes more time. Right? So it should have a point. There should be a reason why. And then again, the question is obviously each person is free to claim what they're interested in and what they're not interested in. I'm just saying that there's room for more than just constitutional texts. If you're interested in the manuscript to a point, then do go digital. Otherwise, save time and stay with your family more. Yeah, it does take a lot of time.
And money.
Money, that's money from the department.
But it doesn't give money for those things that much.
Any more questions? Allora forse ho tempo di fare io una domanda a Paolo. Nel presentare, diciamo, questa, nella tua terza via, accanto alle tu parli di trascrizioni di manoscritti e non immagini. Mm-hmm. Al contrario, Daniel Kiss ha scelto di presentare le immagini e non delle trascrizioni dei manoscritti. E questo è un punto. È utile avere una trascrizione piuttosto che l'immagine? È sempre necessario, se si vogliono poi confrontare i testi dei manoscritti e quindi operare una collazione automatica, è necessario trascrivere, ma per il solo fine di leggere e annotare le varianti grafiche potrebbe bastare l'immagine. E poi c'è il testo critico, diciamo così, che verrebbe aggiunto ai dati reali, ai testimoni. Ora, qui tu dicevi, questo testo diventa parte della storia della tradizione manoscritta di quel testo. Veramente il filologo vorrebbe fare di più, cioè vorrebbe che quel testo riportasse l'umanità all'indietro nel tempo, cioè che avvicinasse, cioè fosse sprofondato nel tempo rispetto ai testimoni che sono conservati, e cioè ci riportasse vicino alla creazione di quel testo. E questo, insomma, si può fare, però va tenuto presente questo intento ricostruttivo che ha l'editore moderno e che forse non aveva così chiaramente in mente l'estensore di un manoscritto medievale. Certo, lui pensava di trascrivere Virgilio, l'autentico Virgilio, sperava anche di poterlo forse correggere con i suoi mezzi, cioè correggere gli errori delle copie precedenti con i suoi mezzi, ma insomma, così chiaro come noi ce lo siamo formato questo concetto del testo critico come il testo che in base ai documenti conservati ci riporta all'indietro nel tempo verso l'autore, e questo è un concetto nostro, direi. Mm-hmm.
Grazie per la domanda, come si suol dire. Shall I reply in English? I think you can all well. Okay, so there are two different questions here. Why the digital image doesn't suffice? Isn't it enough? Why the transcription? The point here is that, I studied digital humanities with Tito Orlandi here in Rome, who's considered basically the father of digital humanities in Italy. He once told me in a private conversation, in a very solemn way, one day you will come to realize, young man, that the only point of doing digital edition, of encoding the text digitally, is so the computer can do something with it, so the computer can process it. The visualization is only one of the processing, but the print is great for this. Let me mention two examples. CLPO, Corpus della Lingua Poetica Italiana dell'Origine, and Artesia, which is also a corpus of very early Sicilian poetry from the Middle Ages. These projects are very much language and linguistics focused. And they want to record and transcribe those words. They're basically transcription of very early texts, often found in individual manuscripts for the Sicilian, only one manuscript. Having that transcription can create a database, which is the point. That's one answer to this question. The second part is, we think we want to reconstruct the true Virgil, to go back in time. I won't argue against the idea that we are better than many scribes. We're better, not me, I'm terrible. But then, in case he's a better philologist, also Carolyn Mazet, than the average scribe, okay. But I would argue that the scribe had exactly the same intention that we had to reconstruct the original text. If we're talking, well, some were just copying, but okay, good scribes, but even bad scribes, I mean, if they found an evident error that they could understand, they would have corrected it. But some, maybe scribes weren't just able to do that, I guess. But the idea is always to go back in time to the original text. Well, I'm just talking about Reynolds and Wilson right now. Mm-hmm. They convinced me. They were trying to. Sometimes they could not. So I thank you very much for this question, because I think that there is an issue here. Contini said that we're only creating an ipotesi di lavoro. Okay? Are we really convinced of this? Or are we like Marx, Karl Marx, who think that Marxism is the end of history? I think we're doing a better job than most scholars. I'm convinced by this. And obviously, if a reader reads this kind of edition, he will read my text, or she will read my text, not the text of the scholar. But then again, I think that there is a switch, a paradigm switch between this and this. In this case, I self-historicize myself. I think this is good. in an ideological sense. So, I don't know.
Other questions? Domande ancora? Gli argomenti resteranno vivi anche nelle prossime sessioni, nei prossimi panel sicuramente, quindi per ora ci salutiamo.